Where's the, there we go. Recorded live. Oh, no, that was Talk Show. I forgot. The Talk Show used to say recorded live. I go, well, if it's recorded, it's not live anymore. Oh, we're on. 646. Yeah, 646-727-3235. Or, you know, I forgot my own number. 813-990-0741. We'll give you the numbers during this little intro thing. We'll be right back. Ron is with us live from Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. We have another segment. It's all about wine coming up right now.
Welcome to the call-in talk show that is all about wine with special guest Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery, located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Winery details and event information will be announced during the show. So sit back, relax, and join us with a cool glass of world-class wine produced right here in Florida. Your comments, questions, and dialogue are welcome. Registered users of Blog Talk Radio can call for free by using the Click to Talk button on our show page, or send questions and comments in our chat room. Registration on Blog Talk Radio is free and only takes a minute. All other listeners may call us by phone. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Tampa listeners may call our local number by dialing area code 813-990-0741. That's 813-990-0741. Finally, if you have Skype, call the show by contacting ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Call us anytime during this hour-long program. It's all about wine. And now, from Florida State's Winery, here's Ron.
Wow. Much bigger audience this time. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank God.
We have a packed house over here in Wesley Chapel. I mean, they're all up in the front.
Yeah.
And it was tough getting them in here because we were setting up the chairs and they were holding them up high, and it was lightning and thunderstorm, so we told them, okay, hold them lower because you're not going to be, you know, a big lightning ruster that way. And
yeah, that could cause a problem. It's like those cows down in Bradenton.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody's listening from around the country, last week some cows got killed down in Bradenton from lightning.
Yeah.
Like they all bundled up together, all huddled together to because of the rain, and the lightning hit them, and it killed like, 15 or 17 cows?
Oh yeah, it was the whole whoever was standing next to them, they were not the lucky ones, but
of bulls, bunch of calves. It was unbelievable. So that lightning here is pretty nasty stuff.
I heard immediately after that the buffet for the ribs was very good.
And I can't find my laugh here from the clown. Crowd. I mean, that's sad.
Yeah, yeah, it was. And
that's good. That's good. My great
lightning capital of the state. So
lightning capital of the United States, not the world. I think someplace in Africa.
Yes,
that title.
Yep, Rwanda. Rwanda is
it? Rwanda.
Yep. Okay. I had to look that up when I was doing narrative tours of Tampa, and because people always ask me that. But anyway. I found that out, and it was
Rwanda. Yeah.
Rwanda, there you go. I bet you they make wine there, too.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I knew that.
Really? Everybody makes wine.
Everybody makes wine. You can find wine everywhere.
All right, if you want to get on the program, ask questions, anything doing with wine, give us a call right now, 646-727-3235. That is a Los Angeles number. Well, we have news out of Los Angeles, but that's all over the news right now, so we'll just go on with the show. And then, or locally, we're going to try this with Skype. We can handle about 20-some-odd calls on Skype. You can call us at 990-0741. That's 813 area code. Give us a call, and we'll put you on the line. Here is Ron, and we have a kind of a mixed thing, and we're also going to talk, I believe you said, about labels.
We're going to talk about labels. We're going to just a few tributes, just different odds and ends tonight. What happened to Barry White on our opening?
I don't know. I didn't hit the change on that one.
Yeah, well, I like this though. This is nice. It gives a little bit more information. But I like Barry's. You know, I mean, he's always Always nice on that.
I'll have to edit. I'll re-edit that. I'll get Barry back.
You get Barry back, yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate Barry doing that for us, too.
Yeah, it was good.
We're going to talk about a few odds and ends tonight. We're going to talk about labels. We're going to talk about probably a few things we've covered already, just to hit lightly on it, just to let people, as a review, refresher, if you will, or whatever. And those who are listening to it for the first time, if you want to know more information about some of this stuff, you can always jump back into previous programs. They are archived, and Mike will tell you later how to check that, how to go back to the archives. So, we're going to cover a little bit of odds and ends here. If anybody, again, wants to call in, we'll repeat those numbers pretty soon here so you can have an idea of how to get a hold of us. Again, odd and end night here. I'm just going to throw out some information about different things so you can just start taking notes and just go really, really busy on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We have covered some of this stuff before, but I want to hit lightly on these things again. Let's start out with a little bit of trivia here on grape vines. An acre of grapes will yield about 5 tons of grapes. An acre of grape vines about 5 tons. Now this varies. Some grape vines are very prolific, and you can get some grape vines that will give you upwards of 10, 11 tons per acre. Some will not give you even 5 tons. Some of them aren't as strong and don't make as large of grape bundles and don't produce as much, so they give you less than 5 tons per acre. But most standard is 5 tons an acre. If a vineyard is producing more than 5 tons an acre, a lot of the wineries try to cut it down to right around 5 tons. 5 tons seems to be the optimum level of finding of growing grapes. If the grapes are too thick, they put a lot of energy into a lot of grapes, it doesn't give you a good grape, a good quality grape. If it is crop back to only 5 tons, it tends to give a little bit more quality, give a little bit more character to the grapes, and that's what we're looking for, obviously, when we're picking grapes and trying to do grapes. Grapevines. As a little aside here, and tell you a little bit about grapevine. Grapevines grow wild. They're basically they're a climber. They will not harm whatever they're climbing on. Most of the time, there are trellised and all that. But if grapevines are thrown out in the wild, they will climb trees and stuff. Turn that down. Most of the time, they will climb trellises and stuff. But they can climb anything. They're not going to hurt whatever they're climbing on. So if they do climb a tree, it is a symbiotic relationship. It's not going to kill the tree. A lot of vineyardists will use different methods to try to coax more quality out of the grapes. One method that's used quite a bit is starving the grape from water, the grapevine from water, cutting back on the water of the grapevine so that it is getting less water as it's after it's flowered and as it's going into summer and starting to produce its grapes. The purpose of this is simply if a grapevine thinks it is dying, it will throw its energy into its babies or the grapes, which contain the seeds and which contain the future generations. So if a grapevine thinks that it's going to be starved of water and a possibility of not living, it will start feeding a lot of energy and a lot of character into the grapes so that those will produce and fall to the ground and have another generation. By doing this to grapevines, what we do is put a lot of energy into the grapes, build up the sugar content, build up the character of the grapes, a lot of fruitiness, and then we water the plant and the grapevine says, "Ooh, good, I'm not going to die after all." But it's too late. The grapes already have all this good stuff. So it's one method of coaxing out a little bit more out of the grapevine. Grapevines are, there's lots of different types, lots of different leaf patterns and stuff. Different grapes will give you different leaf patterns. So as we go into different grapes and all that, the leaf shapes and all that, I haven't been covering in the past. And, there's... larger leaves, smaller leaves, and just every size you can imagine. The Greek are very good at making a grapevine leaf roll up, which is delicious. I've had the chance to taste them before, and they are absolutely delicious. Made from grapevine leaves or grape leaves. They try to find the larger ones, which makes for a better bite, but just about any of them will work. They're, you can, to see pictures of it, go into your search engine, whatever it might be that you, and punch in grapevine or grape leaves, and I'm sure you'll get yourself our pictures of grape leaves, and you'll get yourself more than you care to examine. A lot of them look the same. You got to watch the cuts and the different patterns of them, and you can tear, you can see what type of grape it is just from the grape leaf. One grapevine will give about 18 pounds of grapes. This is average, so when you get yourself an acre, you're getting about 5 ton. One grapevine will make about 6 bottles of wine, so you're going to need approximately 2 grapevines to give you a case of wine. An acre will go about 450 to 500 vines on average, depending on the grapes. When we plant grapes, we talk about the center, where it's planted on center. We go 8-foot, 10-foot centers, 12-foot centers, depending on how long we're running the grapevines once they are planted. And we train them to run on the trellises, how far we want to run them out toward each other. But 8, 10, 12-foot centers, some of them are very, very strong, and they will go out, you know, some people plant them 15-foot centers. Most of them you're going to find is going to be closer than that, though. 4 tons of grapes per acre. An acre makes approximately 225, 250 cases of wine, which is really quite a few cases of wine. If it is in Cabernet Sauvignon, you're going to get more quality and more money out of your case. If it's in a lesser-known grape, obviously it's not going to be as expensive, and you're not going to get as much out of it. Napa Valley grows a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon. A few years ago, they were replanted because of a strain of phylloxera that hit them, and they were replanted. Phylloxera, again, let me cover that. That's something I hit earlier in one of our programs. Phylloxera is a lice, a mite that gets into the root systems of grapevines. It builds up in the root system, causes the grapevines to die. It chokes off the roots and causes the plant itself to die. Everywhere in the world except for 2 countries are planted on American rootstock because of phylloxera. There is 5 basic types of American rootstock that is used in the world. The most prolific one used around the world, I don't know the actual name of it, but it planted in Napa and most other places. Well, about 10, 15 years ago, Napa was hit by strain B of phylloxera, and so Napa had to replant with another set of roots, and when they did, they went a lot heavy on Cabernet Sauvignon, and because Cabernet Sauvignon brings such a big dollar value out of Napa, and it's the reason they did, but you still have a lot of other grapes coming out there, but Cabernet has taken over as the number one planted grapevine in Napa. The when you plant or when you graft grapevines onto rootstock, whatever your root is inconsequential to what the plant is going to be. You can graft a orange tree or an apple tree onto an apple or orange rootstock, the opposite, and you're going to get whatever the top plant is. Think of it as blood. You can transfer my blood into Mike, and he's still going to be Mike. Or you can transfer Mike's blood into me, and it's still going to be me. Basically, that's what root systems are. It's just the lifeline where you get the nutrients and all that and feeds it into the plant. So when you graft, you're keeping the top part of the plant, whatever it is. So a little bit about grapevines there and grapes. AVA, let me talk just a couple minutes. I don't know if we covered this or not. AVA, that's called American Viticultural Area. That's what an AVA is. Now, there are lots of AVAs in this country. Every area can get a designation as an AVA, or as American Viticultural Area. What this is it is a designated area that will give a distinct style and taste to the wine, to the grapes and to the wine. The AVAs are approved, usually they're nationally approved. There are numerous different types of AVAs that you can get. You can also get AVAs within an AVA. A good example of this would be California. California is an AVA. California is an American Viticultural Area. Then you can also go, say, Sonoma AVA. And within Sonoma, you've got other AVAs that pop up within that. Napa Valley is an AVA. And you've got, let's say, Russian River, Canaris, Yountville, different AVAs within an AVA. So it really pinpoints it down to different types of areas and different types of quality and types of grapes and types of wines that have come out of that. So an AVA, American Viticultural Area, you when you see AVAs or when you see areas on a wine, then most of the time it's because it's an AVA, an American Viticulture Area. Napa is probably the most common one that we'll see that we're familiar with. New York has a lot of AVAs. Long Island is an AVA. Hudson Valley is an AVA. Finger Lakes is an AVA. I believe there's other AVAs within the Finger Lakes area. I'm not sure what all they are, but there are other ones within that. So you will see American Viticulture or AVAs listed. It doesn't say AVA Napa Valley or AVA California, but if it's listed on the bottle as from those areas, then they are cashing in on the fact that they are an AVA. I don't know if I covered this or not. Brett, B-R-E-T-T. Do you remember, Mike?
That does not sound familiar. ABA does, but I did. No.
No? Okay. Well, Brett. Brett is common fault in the wine that's caused by the yeast.
Oh.
Brettanomyces. I think I'm almost positive I'm pronouncing that wrong. It can occur in any wine, reds or wines, but usually it affects the red wines. Bread-affected wines are usually described as being barnyardy, mousy, rusty, earthy, along those lines. Earthiness, more of an earthy type aromas than you're going to find in any other wine. No matter what the wine is, it can have a problem with bread. It may have a sour or acidic finish to it when you finish. It's not the standard finish you would expect. Some of the other characteristics that have been described, used to describe Brett in a wine is a rubber bands, Band-Aid, plastic, smoky scents, stuff like this. It's from the yeast, actually. Grapes naturally come in contact with many yeast, different types of yeast, and including Brettanomyces. But when you're making the wines, it intensifies this flaw in the grapes. So not all wines have Brett, and it's one of the possibilities. Unsanitary equipment can be blamed for it. But the way wineries clean and is always on top of stuff for cleaning, because any small bit of bacteria can cause a problem. It's amazing. As a winemaker for Florida State Winery in Eden, I spend more time cleaning the equipment and everything that we're doing continuously. If it's empty, it needs to be cleaned over and over again. Before we put wine in, it needs to be cleaned. As we're going ready for bottling, it needs to be cleaned. And there's all sorts of different methods out there for cleaning, using quaternary ammonium compound, using steam, or osmosis. There's numerous different types of cleaning methods. All of them very good in their own right. Some people swear by some and dislike others. Then you have those who like the others and dislike the ones that the people are swearing by. So it's, you know, a lot of it, it's a matter of preference and all that for cleaning. But everything is cleaned so often, so much that the unsanitary conditions is seldom the problem with causing bread. Actually, bread proliferates in oak barrels. That's really where you're going to, especially the older ones. You get a warm climate, oak barrels, warm climate, and you have a problem, possibly a problem with bread. High residual sugar or pH and poor filtration can cause a problem with the bread while it's being bottled. We filter, most everyone filters their wines now as they're pumping through the bottle. It's just a standard thing using filters that are very small, smaller than blood cells. A grain of sand is rather large when you start looking in that size of items. Blood is about half the size of the grain of sand, still quite large. Bacteria comes down even quite a bit smaller than that. And filters can filter out bacteria, can filter out just about everything, but some of it can get through, and this could cause a problem. Low levels of bread are really, some people look for it. It's appreciated by some people. It's something that it gives, again, the barnyardy, the mousy, the rustic, the earthiness to it, and some people like the levels of that. But as is almost any aroma and any taste in wine, people vary on what they taste and what they can tolerate. You get something that's a real, real low level of bread, and some people may find it offensive, whereas someone else may not be able to detect it at all. Same thing goes with a lot of other stuff. So with the higher levels of bread, it's noticeable by just about everyone, and the wine is bad. You can tell. This is just something else that wineries worry about when they go through it, especially with oak aging. As I said, it's found quite often in that. So a bread is something that you could possibly have a problem with in your wine. And if it is, if you do detect this stuff, and it's not supposed to be there, then don't drink it. Take it back to the store.
Right.
And if you got it at a good store, then they will more than likely give you a replacement or a refund.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a second here to have myself a couple of sips of wine. Mike,
okay.
Would you like to get those phone numbers and everything again?
Yes, yes. Let me do the phone numbers, and we'll give a couple of shout-outs to the people in the chat room. We do have an active chat going on right now. If you would like to call us anywhere where there's a phone, call us by regular phone number at 646-727-3235. That is a Los Angeles number. You can call that with any phone, 646-727-3235. That'll put you into the switchboard on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll get right to us on the program. Now, if you would like to contact us and you're in the Tampa area, or you just want to try the 813 number, we would like to test that as well. We can get up to about 20 people, 20 plus people on the phones this method, and we haven't really, I don't think we tried it yet. Nobody's called the 813 number, but you can contact us on the 813 number, which is, that's the Tampa local area code. It's 813-990-0741. That is real easy to dial. You just dial 990 and then 0741 goes right up the left side of the dial pad there. So, we also have, our turkey guy just left. Okay, let me run this and see what this does. I don't remember listening to this, but let me play this real quick. It may have the phone numbers again, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the call-in talk show that is all about wine. Registered users of Blog Talk Radio can call for free by using the click-to-talk button on our show page, or send questions and comments in our chat room. Registration on Blog Talk Radio is free and only takes a minute. All other listeners may call us by phone. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Tampa listeners may call our local number by dialing area code 813-990-0741. And now, from Florida Estates Winery,
here they are again. All right. We have a big audience out in the yard this time.
This is great, yeah.
Yes.
I love it. Hi, audience. Hi.
Yeah, let's see. We have... let's see. There it goes. Wow, that was a... Okay, that was a long extended there. But anyway, yes, we had Glomp. That was their handle from Turkey listening. And thank you. They could still be out there listening. We don't know because they were in the chat room and saying hi and everything. And then we also have Greg out there. I believe he's in Tampa, in the Tampa area, because he has been to the winery.
Oh, great.
And he actually,
hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi, Greg. And he actually went to, he told me, he went to the Wine Fest last week, last time it was on. Yeah, he went to the Wine Fest. So he's joining us here in chat. Typing about. We're talking about our favorite wines, and it's pretty good. So we do have some individuals in chat, and we're just going as we listen. So
good. Well, glad to have you all out there,
yeah,
and the audience on the lawn too. So let's. We took a little break there. I had a chance to sip some wine, and I'm ready for some more.
All right.
Appellation. Now, we talked about AVA, American Viticultural Area. American Viticultural Area and Appellation, basically the same thing. Only Appellation is usually what's applied around the world. It's a designation of a geographic area, just like AVA is. If you're growing. True Appellation in the European sense, though, goes beyond the geography of an area. It goes beyond where the grapes are growing. It specifies what type of grapes may be grown, and how they may be grown, and how they may be vinified, and all this stuff. It really, European appellations really are quite specific. That's why when you find an appellation from Europe or any old world, and when I say old world, I mean anything in Europe, France, Germany, Italy, that area there, as opposed to New World wines. New World wines are usually referred to as United States, Australia, Canada, and South Africa. These are classified as New World wines. Old World, the European area, the ones that have been around for a long time. So in the Old World wines, the appellation really breaks it down and specifies almost what can and cannot be done to the grapes. It doesn't leave you much leeway, whereas an AVA, American Viticulture Area, gives you a lot of leeway. Doesn't tell you, well, you need to do this to the grape, you need to do this to the wine, you need to do that, whereas Appellation in a lot of the overall areas are quite specific. There are laws set worldwide to enforce the concept that an appellation has a unique land or terroir, and I talked about terroir earlier. Let's cover it again. Terroir, mm-hmm. In the French sense, is everything that happens to that grape. Now, in the United States, we have no English has no equivalent word to describe terroir. There's nothing I can say, and you go, oh yeah, terroir is a distinct French word, which means this is what the grape does, this is what the grape can do, this is how the soil is, all this stuff. It breaks everything down quite specifically. So the laws are set to enforce unique terroir. And the namesake for these areas that are being made from it, the appellation is protects these and the areas that they're coming from. The laws may vary from country to country. It's not all standard rules. The European Union hasn't stepped in and started to control any of the standard rules. So it's an appellation is like a brand name. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. If a winemaker is to claim their wine is of a certain appellation, it has to contain a specific percentage of the wine in the grape. Now, this also applies for the AVA, too, American Viticulture Area. It has to contain a certain percentage of grape in that wine to be called an appellation or be called an AVA. Usually 75 to 85%. It could be a few percentage higher or something. And again, it depends on the country. I mean, different countries have their different rules and stuff. But if it says it is from a certain area for an appellation, then it must contain at least that much grape in the bottle from that area. So if it says California, you can have the grape from anywhere in California, as long as it's 75%, and then you can ship some in from Arizona. If it says Napa, you must have a certain percentage in there, and you can ship some in, say, from Sonoma. A lot of AVAs and appellations usually put in 100%. I mean, they're noted for putting in all from that area. Although over in Europe, certain areas have traditionally done some blending from areas right outside, so it is legal to add a little bit from the outside. Some of the famous AVAs, appellations, some of the famous appellations is Tokay. That is actually was the first designated appellation ever. That was established in 1730. Hence, old world. I mean, quite old there, 1730. Port is another one that was established in 1700s. Champagne is another appellation area. Chianti, Napa Valley. Toro is another appellation. So appellations can come from anywhere around the world and can be anything. So those are appellations. Corked wines. I think we covered corked wines in TCA before. Let's hit this quickly again here. Corked wines are contaminated with TCA, which is actually the chemical is 2,4,6 trichlorinosal, which gives a musty, little skunky flavor to the wine, and a little skunky aroma, musty aroma to the wine. It's said that anywhere from 2 to 5% of all wines are corked, which means it's a chemical reaction from the cork into the wine. Most people have probably had a corked wine and not realized it. It's very, very subtle, a little bit different. You think, ooh, this is a little bit off, and you end up drinking it anyway. I've been involved with wine for many, many, many years, and it wasn't until about 5-6 years ago that I actually had someone say, that wine is corked. And previous to then, I'm sure I've had some, but I've never had anyone say, well, that wine is corked. You don't know. And it, almost takes someone pointing out to you, I'm afraid to say, to really understand. But you can tell if a wine is corked or not just by mustiness, just by a skunkiness, off flavor to it. Again, TCA is one of those chemicals that people can detect in very, very small amounts, just like Brett. Some people are, most people are aware of TCA in quantities as small as 5 parts per trillion. We all know what trillion is now because of all the budgets and everything. Previously, people say that and they go, huh? Now we understand trillion.
Yeah, that's cool.
And some people can even detect in lower parts. So 5 parts or 4 parts per trillion really is not a lot. And people can pick up on that and can detect that in wine. So if your wine is corked or is not right or something, take it back. Return it to the store, or if you're in a restaurant and you get a corked wine, then by all means, call the maitre d' over or whomever is serving you the wine and explain to them that you believe the wine is corked and you would like to have another one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's order wine in restaurants. When you order wine in a restaurant, you expect to spend 3 times retail. That's usually the standard markup. If you go out and you find, let's talk about Florida Estates Wineries, Carmenere. It's $16 a bottle. When you go into a restaurant, expect to pay around $40 for that. This is what the standard markup is. A lot of restaurants will let you bring in wines. They're loosening the rules a little bit now because of the economy. Some of them will let you bring in wine. A lot of them will charge you a corkage fee. And what simply that means is you bring in the wine when you arrive, you hand it to the sommelier or the maitre d' or your waiter. They will then take care of it from there. They will put it on ice if it needs to be chilled. If it's a red, they will treat it properly. And when you're ready for it, they will come. They will open it for you and pour it for you as if it's one of their wines, but it's actually yours. Then they would charge you a corkage fee, anywhere from $5, $20, $25, depending on the restaurant and what the restaurant standard rules are. If you order off their menu, obviously there's no corkage fee, but you are paying three times. So if you have a particular wine that you want to have with a certain meal at a certain restaurant, call ahead. Ask them if they have a corkage fee and if it would be all right to bring your own wine. A lot of restaurants now are starting to waive corkage fees or reduce them. They find that it is always good to be able to invite or have people come into the restaurant if they want to bring their own bottles, as opposed to not coming into the restaurant at all. And so there are cutting back or eliminating corkage fees. Again, call ahead. If you want to take a wine to a restaurant, call them, ask them if they have a corkage fee or if they have any specials or if they would waive the corkage fee. A lot of times, some of the restaurants in the area, some of the finer restaurants will work. I don't think it would work with Burns. Burns has got quite an expensive list. So but Burns is the exception rather than the rule. So if you, again, I was talking about a TCA in it. But if you do detect CCA, send it back. Lees. I don't think I've talked about Lees. L-E-E-S. Let me hit on that just lightly here quickly for a couple minutes. Lees refers to the dead or residual yeast and other particles that are carried to the bottom of a vat after wine has been fermented or aged. Lees. Stuff floats in wine. As you're fermenting it, you still have little pieces of the skin. You have little pieces of the stems, possibly. You have little pieces of the seeds. You know, if you're doing oak aging, if you're putting dust in it for oak aging, and oak can be aged any number of ways, not just oak barrels, but you can use oak dust. You can use oak planks, oak staves, oak down the side of the stainless steel, but any number of ways to get oak in there. But if you put oak in there, all this stuff could be in the wine. It could be floating around in the wine. This is standard. You're gonna find this a lot. Now, a lot of wineries, to clarify this, to clean this up, they will drop egg whites on the top of the wine. So you have a big stainless steel tank. They'll drop egg whites on the top of this. Now, egg whites are thicker than all these particulates, all this stuff that's in the wine. And egg whites is also heavier than the wine. So what it does is it floats down through the wine, and as it is doing this, it picks up all these particles and all these different odds and ends from the wine and drags it to the bottom of the tank. And then the wine is then racked, what they call racking, where they transfer the wine to another vat or another container. So this gives a cleaner wine, so you don't have all this the residual yeast and particulates and all this other stuff, the particles in the wine anymore. Some wines are aged on the lees, though, some left on there, and to give a characteristic flavor and aroma to it. It gives it a yeasty aroma and taste. Not the best way to explain it, because it is residual yeast that's left in the wine. So it gives you a little yeastiness. Right now I can't think of I usually try to compare something to a taste or aroma, and for yeast I can't think of anything right now. So, You can detect this.
Are you saying the flavor of the lees?
The lees, yeah. Lees is the yeast.
Yeah, you have because we did kind of cover this before, and I think it was when we were talking about filtering that you said it has an aroma like uncooked dough.
There you go.
Okay,
thank you.
That's what I had there.
I'm glad somebody listens to me. I wasn't.
Listens and write stuff down.
Oh, very good. And you got to follow the waves so you can find it real fast.
Too. Absolutely, yeah.
So, uncooked dough. That's there you go. That's a good description. I did good on that. The leaves may be stirred in to the wine called batonnage in French. The leaves are stirred in called it's batonnage, which gives you the promote the characters of the leaves in the wine. L-E-E-S leaves. You don't find that a lot in American wines as much as you do in old world wines. On that. Residual sugar, that's the percentage of sugar that's left in the wine. We've covered that in previous things. We went into quite detail on the residual sugar, so I'm not going to go into it real heavily here. But it's the amount of sugar that's left in the wine. White wines tend to have more sugar and less alcohol. Red wines tend to have less sugar and more alcohol. So the residual sugar of red wines usually is quite a bit less than they are in white wines. Red wines, just by the nature of being a red wine, tends to be drier. When it comes to wines, wines are sweet or dry. So those are two ends of it. If a wine is not sweet, then it's dry. That's the opposite. People say, well, how can something wet be dry? Well, you're not speaking of the opposite of wet. You're speaking the opposite of sweet. So the lack of sweetness gives it the dryness, and residual sugar is the sweetness that you detect. The lack of that residual sugar is the dryness. Terroir, I hit that a little bit lightly earlier and told about the French word terroir. Oxidation, let me cover that again. We've talked about oxidation lightly before, but it's always something good to bring up. Oxidation is when a wine has been exposed to oxygen, hence the root word for the word oxidation. It's basically it's lost its characteristics. It's became flat, almost a vinegary nose, even a vinegary taste. If a wine is oxidized, it does really start showing the bad characteristics. An oxidized white wine, it's like a bitten apple, where it starts turning brown color. You take an apple, you slice it, you let it sit out in the air a little bit, starts turning that brown. White wines will do the same thing. If they're oxidized, start doing the same thing. And wine can get oxidized in the bottle. It doesn't have to just be sitting in your glass. It can get oxidized in a bottle. Also, white wines can start showing a little brownish color, start turning an off brownish color. In red wines, same thing. You're going to find that brownish, that off color. Red wines also a little bit harder to detect because they are red. And oxidation is usually, the tannins usually fight the oxidation. So red wines aren't really as quickly to be oxidized as white wines, but they can go oxidized. Some winemakers think it's a necessity to have wines a little bit oxygenated, a little bit oxidized. I'm not part of that school. In red wines, it can get some character, it can get some stuff, but you've got to be careful because it can very easily go beyond the point where it's good and start quickly becoming bad. And that's the reason, one of the debates on corks and screw caps is because of oxidation there and long-term aging. And a red wine, the best way to detect if a wine is starting to change, especially in a young red wine, is to hold the glass at an angle, so the wine is like at a 45-degree angle on the glass, and look at the edge. If you see a browning of the edge, you see an off color of the edge, then that is oxidation, usually, especially in young wines. Older wines, you're going to get that anyway, and that's a whole nother bunch of information there that I'm not going to get into right now. But an oxidized wine is one that's been in contact with the air. Once you've opened the wine, refrigerated, red or white, you want to stop any possibilities of oxidation. So stop it. Malolactic fermentation, we've hit on that before. I'll just talk for a couple of minutes. Malolactic fermentation is the second fermentation that a wine goes through. Most often, you'll find this in Chardonnays. This is why people talk about the butteriness of a Chardonnay, because it went through a malolactic fermentation. That's the smooth, buttery type aromas and taste. What it is the malic acid of a wine is fermented into the lactic acid of a wine, into a wine. And so it gives you that smoother, softer taste, the butteriness that people look for in Chardonnays. Phylloxera, we talked about that. And I mentioned something about phylloxera. Botrytis is the mold that gets on it. Again, you can refer to a previous program. I went quite detail into botrytis. And Brix also, I went into a lot of detail on that in the previous program, talking about Brix, which is sugar. In the wine business, we talk about degrees. Brix are the percentage of sugar. Degrees meaning percentage. Brix, B-R-I-X, meaning sugar. We are wine people. We're cool, so we talk that way. Instead of just saying sugar or percentage sugar, we say degrees Brix. One thing, and I noticed my time here, and that's why I ran through those things. I want to talk a little bit about labels.
Okay.
This is something that we haven't talked about yet, and I do want to just hit lightly upon labels here. Labels can tell you a good story. Labels can tell you an awful lot about a wine. Some labels are rather lacking, I think, and I think that's sad personally, because I always like to have information, a little bit of information. If it weren't so expensive to have our labels completely retooled, I would consider retooling ours and telling a little bit about the wine of each one. But with these economic times, we're also looking at, you know, not doing that for a while. But on the label, you grab yourself a bottle of wine, any wine, and I just happen to have one here, and I will give them a little plug. It's from Newcastle, Kentucky. The name of the winery is Smithberry Winery. But this wine on the front label, it says Smithberry Winery, Newcastle, Kentucky, American. Now, you can actually interpret that as an AVA or an appellation, American. This is an American wine. So single barrel select American oak. What they're saying is that this was Asian oak. They're going around about it, but they're saying this is Asian oak. Most every label you read will have the name of the winery, will have where the wine is from, and the type of wine. Now, this one says a dry white wine, which simply is saying that it aged in oak, a dry white wine. First thing you think of, Chardonnay. Obviously, this isn't Chardonnay, because if it were, they would have stated Chardonnay. So it's just a dry white wine, probably a blend of different grapes from the area there coming up. And then they dumped them in oak barrels to get a little bit of oakiness to it and to soften it. Most all labels will have the size on the front. I say most all labels because sometimes they put it on the back, but they'll have the size of the bottle. 750 milliliter is your standard bottle size now. This is the one you go to the store and you pick up wine. 99% of the time you're going to be buying a 750 milliliter or a 1.5 liter, which is double the size of the 750 milliliter. Also, the alcohol by volume will be listed on the wines. This is also required by law. It tells you the amount of alcohol in the wine. This particular wine is 12% by volume. Most all the wines that I make are right around the same. They're right around 12%, give or take a little bit. We have instruments now. We have ways we can test and all that, and we can come up with percentage of wines to like 3 percentage points or 3 decimal points. Most of the time, by law in the United States, you're only required to have the percentage of alcohol within 2 percentage points from either direction. So when you say 12% alcohol by volume, yes, we can test this exactly to this, but the laws state that this could be as low as 10% or as high as 14% and still be legally labeled as 12%. So, but again, because of the instruments and everything, we are able to test everything now. It's when you say percentage, you're pretty much right. Back of the label, a lot of times it'll tell you about the areas. A lot of times it'll tell you about where it's from. A lot of times it'll tell you about the wine. A lot of times it'll just be a publicity little thing telling about the winery and stuff like that. This particular one talks about the area that it's from. Smithberry Vineyard and Winery is a small family farm located in north central north central Kentucky, on the northern edge of the state's famous bluegrass region. And then it goes on and talks about the cattle and the tobacco farms and switch over to wine. A lot of wineries in Kentucky are now planting oak tobacco farms. And it really does. A lot of the soil there is absorbed as tobacco. A lot of them do give you this hint of tobacco-type taste in it, which is really quite interesting. Produced and bottled by Smithberry, it says. Now, produced means that they grew the grapes. If anything else is used besides produced, I'm trying to find something else. I got a bunch of bottles here. It could be cellared and bottled by. It could any number of other terms are used. Means that they can buy, that they have bought the grapes. Produced, grown and bottled. Here, I've got another bottle here. It says grown and bottled by. That actually means that they grew it. So if you want to see if the winery itself is doing it, then look for those terms on it. Smithberry Winery gives the address. It gives a website. Some wineries will give you phone numbers. I have sat down to drink bottles of wine before and couldn't figure out what the blend was, and I have called the winery and asked them. Most of the time, they'll connect you to the people who know. Every label, every wine bottle sold in the United States has to have the government warning on it. According to the Surgeon General, women should not drink alcoholic beverages during pregnancy because of the risk effects, and two, consumption of alcoholic beverages impairs your ability to drive a car or operate machinery and may cause health problems. That is a requirement by law. You cannot get your label approved unless that is on the label somewhere. This is something that is on every single label that you will find one place or another for every wine that is made in the United States. And then contains sulfites. Every wine will have that on it too. That is also a requirement by law. This is the bottle I just read you from Kentucky here. I've got one here from Kansas. This one is a much simpler label. There is no back label on this. The front one is from Hollyfield Vineyard and Winery. This is a Chardonnay. Again, the name of the winery, the name of the grape, a Chardonnay, and it says Kansas Table Wine. And then on the side, it is the side of the front label. It gives the government warning, contains sulfites, and it says grown and bottled by Hollyfield Vineyard and Winery, Basehor, Kansas. And that's it. That's all it says on this label. Very simple, very easy, quick and to the point. Florida State Winery, Florida Orange, light citrus wine with natural pure flavors. That's my orange wine, 12.2% volume, alcohol by volume. On the back, again, very simple. Not much information, but we do have the government warning on there, required by law. Fresh from Florida. We are a Florida farm winery, so therefore we carry the designation. Mm-hmm. And made and bottled by Florida State Winery. We have our website on there. And it's that simple. One other here I want to cover, and then we'll open up.
We have announcements and things, yeah.
Yeah, announcements, all that. And this is a Carmenere Merlot blend from Chile. This is really a quite extensive label. It goes into a whole bunch of stories here about the Carmenere grape and the wine, and it talks about the future of it and all that. No back label, just a front label. It does say product of Chile, produced and bottled for Swartz Enclos Imports. A lot of wines in from other countries are imported. Almost every one of them will have the importer listed on the bottle. So that's a little bit, a bunch of, odd and information for tonight. We're going to talk some more about grape varietals next week.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about another grape varietal next week. I'm probably Merlot. Merlot is really quite popular grape, so we'll talk about a Merlot next week. And so that's it for tonight.
Excellent. Very good. We still have a few minutes left, and I did want to mention a couple of things that you have coming up. This particular weekend is another Wine Fest. Real quick, let me give a shout-out to one of our listeners from past shows, and they've been connecting with us. Is you were talking about Finger Lakes Wine Country earlier, and they're actually connecting to us and listening as well. I don't know if it's tonight, but they have listened to us. They're on our little show page, so that's cool. And they do a show on Blog Talk Radio as well. I believe the next show is on Hernan Hills. You might be familiar with that, but apparently it's Finger Lakes Wine Country.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
They're going to be specifying Hernan Hills, and they're going to have the winemaker there on the program July 1st at 11:30 a.m. So I just wanted to give a quick shout-out. Thank you for listening to our program, and you know, we'll try and listen in as well, and they also have on-demand shows there. But locally, we have, let's see, down at the winery, or up at the winery from here, north of us, there is a wine fest this Saturday from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., and that's going to be real cool. We've got you have Dave doing the artistic writing instruments again. They are handmade. They're beautiful writing instruments, pens, and just you have to go down there and take a look at Dave's work there. It's all handmade, and it's great. Also, Jay with Mary Kay. If you purchase items there, there will be donations to a charity, non-profit organization. She's making some donations there, so definitely check that out and support these vendors. Actually, Patty's going to be returning with some dog or Patty's going to have Patty's Doggy Delights. I didn't see that last time. This will be interesting.
Yeah, she'll be there. Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. You know, if you have a pet, definitely take a look at that and see what she has there. Let's see. Melody is going to be providing goodies and treats at her table set up there. And something I never heard of is wine jelly. That sounds really interesting.
And she used it different times. She's been there a long time ago, and it's delicious stuff. Yeah,
Wine jelly sounds really good. And Angelo Cook, of course, is going to be he's a frequent there that is providing entertainment. Angelo Cook will be returning and at the Wine Fest. That is this weekend, Saturday, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. If you're interested in learning everything you can about wine, there is also a wine class at the winery July 18th. That is the next wine class. If you have a group of at least six or more, you want to schedule a class that is better for you, call the winery. It's 813. Let me see if I can pull that up. I know you know it, but you know, normally I have. Oh, here it is. 996-2113. That's how you contact the winery on by phone, 813-996-2113. Visit the website at www.floridaestateswines.com. And the winery is open daily, 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. You go past the, if you're coming from 75, you go west on 52, and you pass Bellamy Brothers Boulevard. There's the Neon Cowboy there on the side, and you go a little bit past that on the right, and you'll see the signs for the winery. It's great. How is Lorena doing? I believe there's an announcement here in the newsletter that she had a baby girl on May the 13th.
She had a baby girl. The baby girl's doing fine. Lorena's doing fine, and we're looking forward to getting her back to helping us, but it probably won't be for a while yet.
All right, very good. Oh, and we have less than 2 minutes. Okay. Let's see, what else? I don't have, I think that was all. There was a lot of information here. That's quite a good deal there, and it kind of summarizes what we covered before. There was a lot of new information, and we're here each week at 7 p.m. on Thursdays, and it's all about wine. We have.
You can join us on our Facebook site, too, join us on our Facebook, Florida State Winery. Facebook has a page. Become a fan on that also. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll let you close up here.
Oh, yeah, I got to let's see where my next one is. Okay, that'll do it. we'll get about 40 seconds of this out, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, if you want to comment on the show, you want to contact us, all the information is on the MySpace page at least. It's myspace.com /ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number one. And let me see if I can run this.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com.
Oh, and it stopped.
Or call area code.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, it stopped.
Oh, well. I'll start cutting off at 10 till from now on. I'll start watching my time, and I'll cut off at 10 till.
I'll send you a little, something. I was putting on there like announcements, but it was like 10 minutes or so, and I thought, no, let's just keep going. We'll get them out.
Or something.
Okay.
Well, Ron, shut up or something like that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let me see if anybody was. Greg, you know Greg First? That was his name. Let me see. He says he's, oh, my God, it's not in there. He did something with the Blood Mobile or Blood.
Yeah.
He was in chat and listening and got him set up on that. So I guess he's registered on Blog Talk Radio now. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. I know him. Yeah, he comes up quite often and sits around and mm-hmm. –